Stay tuned for a Juno Afternoon. We'll learn about Community Day on campus. We'll hear about the upcoming afternoon of Ave Maria's. And Julie Diane from the Juno Dance Theater will be here with details about their spring showcase. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more live at 3. We hope you'll stay tuned, but first let's look at the weather. This afternoon, mostly clear, increasing clouds. Tomorrow, partly sunny Thursday.
This is Bird Note. Even though it's been known for many years that birds spit out caterpillars they find repellent, little research has yet been devoted to birds' sense of taste. And because birds have tough, bony beaks and hard, skinny tongues, it was just hard for experts to give birds much credit for tasting their food. So it wasn't until the 1970s that a scientist found taste buds on the inside of a duck's bill. More than 400 of them. And an experiment with ducks showed that when they picked up peas with the tips of their bills, they could easily discriminate between normal peas, which they happily gulped down, and unpleasant-tasting peas, which they rejected. Taste buds have been studied in only a few bird species, so the field of inquiry is wide open. It is known that hummingbirds can taste different concentrations of sugar, and that sandpipers can taste the presence of worms under a mudflat. The fact that birds have far fewer taste buds than humans doesn't necessarily mean their sense of taste is crude, as one Hollywood duck might put it.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Of all the stupid suggestions.
For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling. Again, just a quick look at the weather. This afternoon, mostly sunny. Tonight, mostly clear. Tomorrow, increasing clouds, but there's some sun peeking through, and that will continue as partly sunny on Thursday, with showers likely on Friday. We're glad you're with us this afternoon. Our first guest today is Nancy DeCherney with the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. We're going to be talking about Community Day on campus, which has become quite a tradition associated now with Juno Jazz and Classics. So it's this Saturday.
Which is going to be a sunny day just like this.
Like every day for the rest of the summer. I'm so glad about that.
Yeah.
What happens during Community Day on campus? And I should know, it's free, as
it's
I recall.
It's all free.
The whole
Everything
thing
is free. It's free to have a booth. It's free to come and listen to the music. It's free to do whatever. So it's a lot of fun. Because who doesn't like free? It's, as you say, a long-standing tradition that we've been doing. It's with Jazz and Classics. So they have live music all through the day with a bunch of different musicians. A lot of them are the local bands, local high school bands and such. I forgot to bring the lineup with me, but excuse me. And then out on the lawn, or if it is in fact rainy, inside the library, there are a variety of booths. It's an opportunity. Okay, so like DiPak will be there, and you can make little fish prints out of things, and there will be art therapy, and there will be little booths. The Bouncy House will be out there, so all kinds of things for kids to do, parents to do. You can get information about things. We collaborate with the Juno Douglas School District on the Elementary Art Juried Show. So those pieces are currently on display in various libraries, but just by schools. So, for example, the Gastineau School stuff is all at Douglas Library. All those will be gathered up, and they'll be on display. And then at noon, the children whose art was selected for this juried show will receive their ribbons from the mayor's actually going to be there to do that for us. So that's something we do all the time. There's food. There's just a whole lot of things going on. Somebody doing compost. So
also free.
Also free. Well, he wants, you know, it's like I said, it's an opportunity for anybody in the community who has something. We started it out to be a thing where, tell you how long ago it was, is when my kids were in elementary school and I didn't know what to do when summer approached and I needed to put them somewhere. And so it was an opportunity for camps, kids to come out. It's one place, get your kids signed up for all the camps there are. It's sort of varied off from that now. But if you have an opportunity or something that you'd like to share with the community, as I said, it's free. You just bring your own table and chairs out, set yourself up, and then take yourself home. It's just fine. We don't care. It's an opportunity for fundraising. There'll be various different organizations having bake sales and doing all sorts of things out there. So it's just a wacky time, generally speaking.
Well, for Juno, that really is quite representative because, you know, really, Juno's this great compilation of so many different things going on that having them come together as they will for one day on campus sounds like a nice cross-section of the community. I'm noting that it starts at 11 and ends at 4. And I'm also recalling that almost every community day on campus has been pretty nice.
It has been. There's only been one. And it could be that this will be another one. But, you know, let's go with it's going to look just like this. You know, this really, really started years ago. I don't remember if you remember that we did a concert out at the glacier. Everybody had to haul their own chairs out to what was now the waterfalls. And the string kids from Gowasha's group and some of the string players from Jazz and Classics took dugout canoes across the lake, and they had a concert out there. And I remember I was coordinating Jazz and Classics at the time, and it had been raining the entire festival. And Linda and I looked at each other and went, what were we thinking to schedule an outdoor event in Juneau in May? And that morning it dawned just like this and was beautiful for the whole day. So it's kind of traditionally been like that.
I think there is a picture of that glacier venue on the website of Juno Jazz and Classics.
Yes, there is.
It's a beautiful picture.
It was a wonderful, wonderful event, and it's just kind of morphed from that to being, let's have something outdoors for the community. And it sort of kicks off the summer, I think. You know, we're getting ready to have our Rock Around the Block parties, and that's the same idea, music outdoors, dancing, things to do, booths, all sorts of crazy stuff. So, and that'll be every Friday night starting on June 2nd. So
it's just a couple of weeks away.
Isn't it?
quite close. Glad to hear you're ready.
Yes, yes.
Now, do you know what groups or what types of performers from Juno Jazz and Classics will be performing? Because I know that's a huge draw as part of that a 20-day event. And
I don't know.
Free performances.
Yes, and I think that it's mostly the high school and middle school bands, jazz band and the other sorts of bands, and I really wish that I had brought the list with me. You'll have to go on to the website, which is jahc.org, and look at that. But it's a great music all the time. I'm always impressed with what comes out of that group, of all the groups in the school. You know, they've been playing all year long. And
so it's kind of an end-of-year recital for the youngsters who are in those music programs.
I think in years past, sometimes there's been a Jazz and Classics musician that will have been doing workshops with them and perform with them. Because of the timing of this particular time, I think the evening performance is Richard Thompson, which if you haven't gotten your tickets for, you need to do that right away, because that one might sell out. It should. And so I don't think there are any of the musicians that will be out with this. But on the other hand, our kids are pretty gosh darn talented in what we've got. And I believe that perhaps there might be the big band and some of those other bands.
Thank you for that clarification. Let's talk for a minute about the district-wide elementary school art exhibit. What was the genesis of that? And is it just elementary?
Yes, it's just the elementary. It's something that sort of Nancy Lanehart spearheads. Teachers throughout the year know that this is going to happen, and they pick two pieces from throughout the year of art that they do in their classroom that they think is representative of the work that's being done. So two students from each classroom from every single school, I think this year the Montessori class didn't come in, but every other elementary school did. And I personally think that children's art sometimes is the most amazing stuff. We help mount them on these big boards, and usually community day is earlier and we see them first there and then they go to the libraries. But this year, because of the lateness of community day, we took them to the library first. But it is just an opportunity for people to see the creativity that's going on in our schools and appreciate everything that the teachers and classrooms are doing.
I assume they're going to be displayed inside in order to protect them from potential inclement weather. Will that be at the library?
Well, you know, in years past, it's always been outdoors, and it's been lovely.
Well,
so, but we do have a game plan.
I admire your faith.
We have a game plan should that not be the case. So if it's bad, then everything will take place inside the library. But let's just keep the faith.
So if each elementary teacher can select two, there must be hundreds of entries in the exhibit.
There's like 137 of them. Yeah, and like I said, I want to give a big shout out to Cindy Hudson and the Women of the Moose. This is a project that they have adopted, and every year they go out and raise some money to help us with the mounting costs, because you have to get flat board and all that sort of stuff to put all the stuff on. And they come and also Cindy and her friends help us with putting them on the boards and then help us with setting them up out at the community day. And I really appreciate the Women of the Moose for that.
It's one of those behind-the-scenes contributions to a little thing that
makes a
difference. That individual child will never forget.
It's true. And it is, I think, pretty exciting. We give the awards out school by school. So if your kid is in one of those schools, then by all means come out and see what their classmates or themselves have been doing.
And what time are the awards? Did you say
noon?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They'll be at noon.
Speaking of noon, you said there will be food. Do you know if there will be food trucks, or how will that be provided?
I know that the UAS Marant Cafe will be open. Often there's a hot dog guy out there. I see that there's going to be root beer floats.
What more do we need to
know?
Really. I'm sorry.
Say no more. There's cotton candy and popcorn. I am looking for the rest of the whole thing. I don't know. You know, it's like I said, it's one of those things where sometimes it's too much. People just show up.
I think that's exciting that it'll be kind of what they call that pop-up.
Yes, it's a
pop-up event.
Yes.
We're talking with Nancy DeCherney of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council about this Saturday, the Community Day on Campus, which has become a long-time tradition, and it usually happens within the time that Juno Jazz and Classics is happening as well to promote music, and we will have some youth musical groups there from some of the local schools and an elementary school art exhibit for which some prizes will be distributed at noon.
One little thing I should point out is they're doing construction on the highway, so take the turn at Super Bear and come around the back loop road to get there.
It really is quite dramatic.
Yeah, unless you like construction.
Construction that's going out there. But that's an excellent reminder that the entrance to the university is on the back loop road.
Yeah.
And it's probably best to take the long way there, either down loop road to back loop, or Riverside to Back Loop.
Yep.
So Community Day on Campus, and it's free, 11 to 4, this Saturday. Where else? On the campus.
And we'll see you there.
Nice. Thanks for coming over, Nancy. Bye-bye.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Indian country leaders are in Washington, D.C. this week to urge lawmakers to honor trust responsibilities, which they say includes funding needs. More than 40 witnesses are scheduled to testify during a two-day hearing in a House Appropriations Subcommittee. Tuesday morning, lawmakers first heard from the National Indian Health Board. Chairman Vinton Hawley urged Congress to fully fund the Indian Health Service.
As you are aware, the health status of American Indians and Alaska Natives continues to be among the worst in the country. Historical trauma, poverty, lack of access to healthy foods, loss of culture, and many other determinants of health all contribute to the poor state of American American Indian and Alaska Native health. We live on average 4.5 years less than other Americans, but in some states that is 20 years less. But none of these challenges alone is as damaging as financially starving the Indian health system.
Hawley asked for stronger investments in Indian country, saying the National Indian Health Board supports the IHS budget request for fiscal year 2018 for $30.8 billion over 12 years, with priorities in areas of hospitals and clinics, mental health, alcohol, substance abuse, and dental services. Witnesses this week are also testifying about housing, education, and other needs in their communities. Tribal leaders nationwide have raised concerns about the uncertainty of the national budget. In South Dakota, tribal leaders are helping dedicate a new visitor center, which has ties to Native Americans. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Good Earth State Park is in southeast South Dakota, a short drive from the state's largest city of Sioux Falls. Historians have called it one of the earliest examples of human habitation in the U.S. Friday, several tribal leaders and state officials plan to host an open house for the park's new visitor center. South Dakota Governor Dana Stugard, tribal officials, and Game Fish and Parks Secretary Kelly Hepler will speak at the dedication. Hepler says the building includes an interactive exhibit demonstrating Oneota culture, along with a state-of-the-art theater and a classroom for park programs. Hepler says the 650-acre park is a historic and cultural landmark. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
A new NBA D-League team is named after the Agua Caliente Band of Cahuilla Indians. Tribal officials, the LA Clippers, and the NBA Development League announced the team name and tribal partnership during a press conference Monday. Clippers President of Business Operations, Gillian Zucker.
While the NBA is no stranger to deep relationships with Native American tribes, the Clippers Association with the Agua Caliente Band of Cahuilla Indians has exemplified the best of what these marketing partnerships can achieve. Through this platform, they've been able to highlight the ancestry and culture of tribal traditions. Having the Agua Caliente name as part of our new development league allows us the opportunity to further generate awareness for this tribe, locally, regionally, nationally, and even globally.
Tribal Chairman Jeff Gruby says having the team named after the tribe is an honor, adding it's significant because the tribe is not the team's mascot. The mascot is a condor.
Today is especially special because we're not the mascot. If you look at all the teams throughout this country, and some of them are done well, some others aren't, but today it's our name that names this team, and we have a great mascot, right? Let's give him a round of applause. Does a great job. But it's not us, and that's significant. That's something that my tribe is very proud of, the 485 members. And I think that's something that's going to have a positive ripple effect throughout the country.
The Agua Caliente Clippers will play 24 games in Ontario, California, which is located about 40 miles east of Los Angeles. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com.
And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Healthy Smiles are here. On May 22nd, Search will open the doors to its updated and expanded Children's Dental Clinic. Staffed by board-certified pediatric dentists and outfitted with the latest in pediatric dental technology, the new clinic will provide your child with a lifetime of healthy smiles. All kids smiles welcome, from the first tooth to 17 years old. Call 789-KIDS to make an appointment for your child today. This message brought to you by Search.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling. Our guests in the studio right now are Scarlett Adam and Sarah Brown, who are with the Juno Lyric Opera, and we're talking about the upcoming afternoon of Ave Marias. I've already learned a lot in the last couple of minutes, but the first thing I asked you about, what is the significance of the Ave Marias? What does that mean?
So in the month of May, we celebrate Mother's Day, but also in the very last Sunday of May, the Catholic tradition celebrates Mary's Day. Mary, the Mother of God, that Mary.
Just that Mary.
clarify that. So anyway, last year we did an afternoon of Ave Marias, and basically inspiration came about was we wanted to do something toward the end of the year. How could we, utilize the beautiful shrine of St. Therese?
Yep.
And we thought, what a wonderful way to honor mothers, basically, during that special month and during the May and at the shrine. So
yeah,
that's how the Ave Marias came about. Ave Maria is literally a chant sung in honor of Mary, so that's why we centered it around that specific chant. Our program consists of music beyond Ave Marias, but that's sort of the focal point.
Well, you're both singers. I'm going to put you on the spot, and you can always say no. Could you sing a little bit of the chant together?
Not
or is
at
that,
all.
Is
we
that
want
patented?
People to come.
We want people to come.
Oh, I see. Well,
and
there's
lots of opportunities.
Yes, and we will unveil the beautiful music on Sunday, so people need to be sure and get their tickets. They sold out quickly last year. 3 p.m. is sold out this year, and we still have some tickets for 5 p.m., but don't mess around because it's worth seeing.
Mm-hmm. So the ticket prices, we were chatting about that a little bit. They're $15 and
right.
$5. Why don't you make that distinction? And then you cannot buy them at the doors. So
no.
Give some direction to folks.
$15 for adults and seniors and $5 for students and children. So it makes it very affordable for families. Again, this Sunday, the 3 p.m. show is sold out, but the 5 p.m. show, we do still have a few tickets, but there's another opportunity to hear us sing, and that is on Saturday during Jimmy Jack and Classics Community Day.
Yes.
So we will be at the Egan Library at 12:45. We will do about a 20-minute set there, so you can hear a pretty substantial chunk of our program there in another really great space.
Well, so that'll be inside the Egan Library then because of the acoustics, I would assume.
Correct.
Right.
I believe they always do the stage in that area anyway.
So what is that? Well, whose idea was this initially to do the May-related honoring of mothers and women?
Scarlett. This was one that I came up with. So last year was Juno Lyric Opera's 40th year. Yeah, so it was very exciting. And so we wanted to do at least one event each month throughout our 40th season. So when May came along, that's where it sort of came up with, well, mothers and the shrine. We've never really performed at the shrine before. Why haven't we? And how can we put this together? It just sort of was an organic idea, and everybody was like, yay! So it really turned out to be beautiful. Sarah picked all the music last year, and it was, I was really happy to sing, but the enthusiasm and the joy during and after the concert was, people were like, do it again, do it again. So here we are.
And this, last year we focused, we had two big choral numbers, and then the majority of it was focused last year on small ensemble, like solos and duets and trios and things like that. And this year it's much more of a focus on the whole ensemble. We have about 28 women singing together, and most of it is a cappella music, so, no piano. I think only one of our pieces literally has piano accompaniment. Everything else is a cappella, so it's going to be a really beautiful, pure sound in the shrine. But we also have Sally Schlichting and Dan Hobson. They will sort of be our instrumental interlude.
Yes,
they are going to
so
present
wonderful.
An Astor Piazzolla piece. And I erroneously said flamenco earlier today. It's tango. He's a tango composer.
Yes,
but it's for classical guitar and flute. And that'll be a really beautiful sort of set in between all the vocal stuff. But and then we have Annika Morgan singing Robert Preisman's Ave Maria as well as a solo. But everything else is all ensemble. So I'm really excited to have more pieces with the women singing together as opposed to, the smaller.
We're mixing it up a bit this year.
And why just women?
Well, we had some guys, some intrepid gentleman last year join us, and it was a lot of fun, but the music was arranged for female voices, mm-hmm. so they had to sing a little bit higher than they might normally, and Sarah was like, it's just girl power.
Yeah, and we had a lot of women express an interest,
yes.
after they heard last year. So we want to do it. So, you know, can we? And there's only so many people that fit in the shrine. So we really had to limit it to so many people we can fit as an audience member, but also how many people we could have singing.
It'll be stuffed in there. It'll be very cozy. People in the balcony as well as around, and so we're going to use every corner and inch. And
it's a lovely sight, but it is cozy.
It is cozy.
Yes, and hopefully the weather will cooperate. But even if it doesn't, it'll still be fabulous. And last year, like Sarah was saying, the whales came. So it was.
They heard you.
Oh, yeah. They said that they could hear us. You know,
did they join?
I'm sure they did.
You know, the peninsula that the shrine sits on, you can actually hear us from the parking area. It's so resonant out there. So,
yeah.
And my experience is being out on the catamarans when strings are playing, the whales are very curious about the sound. So I actually think we can
draw out the whales. Some of those high notes and the sound travels.
So you mentioned that a number of women came up to you after last year's show and said it was so beautiful. I would like to be a part of that. What is the process? Do you require that somebody try out?
Well, yes and no. Because it's a small space and the music is challenging and we only have so long to put it together. I've literally only been here for a week. And so we're slamming lots of difficult music in 1 week. For this particular concert, I have requested that they be good music readers. And if they're not excellent music readers, they can follow someone very well. They pick it up really quickly.
Right.
So
this specific event has been a little bit more focused on skill. However, mm-hmm. we've got other things coming up this summer that anybody can join. So we have our midsummer coming in July, and anybody who wants to sing, even if they think they can't sing, they are more than welcome mm-hmm. to come. So we try to touch on all aspects of our performers and skills and give everybody an mm-hmm. opportunity in some format.
Right. There's a lot of music teachers that are actually part of this that otherwise are not able to join because of their teaching schedules and things. So you know, being able to just block out 1 week of their time allows them to do that. So I think they've been really excited to have an artistic outlet, you know, other than through the schools or through their students and things. So it's their chance to perform. And
I'm super excited. Sally Smith is actually singing with us. Normally she's conducting and directing, and she's singing with us this time. Mm-hmm. So that's very exciting.
Missouri Smythe is also
Sandy Fortier,
music teacher.
Mm-hmm. So lots of
well-known, wonderful singers.
Yes.
But you're right, many of them are very busy coordinating other singers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So speaking of conducting, I have a couple questions. Sarah, are you the conductor?
I am the conductor for this.
And did you have, and you said I've only been here a week, so are you not a Juno person?
I'm actually the executive director for Juno Lyric Opera, but I recently had to move to down south. I live in Seattle, but JLO kept me on, and so I travel up here every couple months. And,
she's commuting.
But this is my project, basically, that I, you know, they let me take under my wing. Scarlett asked me last year to conduct it, and I said, absolutely.
Just try to stop her. You selected all the music. Did you have a theme in mind for this year?
Just based off, you know, going from the Marian-inspired Ave Maria.
No, when you say Marian, you're referring to Mother Mary, the chant,
the original chant. And then from there, we're singing some lullabies, so there's still an attachment to mothers in that sense. We're singing some songs like Will the Circle Be Unbroken and Down by the River, which are spirituals, but they have a lot of very community, sisterhood feeling to it. Mm-hmm. So we just really wanted it to have a very tight sense of that sisterhood, that community feeling.
The connection.
I think the link through all of the music that Sarah's picked this year is joyful and you know, cherishing. And I just love it. I love this program. I can just imagine my mother on Sunday. She's going to be in the front row clapping and waving her hand. So
we're talking today with Scarlett Adam and Sarah Brown, who are with the Juno Lyric Opera, and we're talking about a women-focused, women-oriented concert called the Afternoon of Ave Marias. There are two programs on Sunday afternoon. The 3 o'clock program is sold out. The 5 p.m. program does have some tickets left. So to get the tickets, then we talked about the price. You cannot get them at the door. So folks do want to get a ticket.
Yes.
Where do they go? Who do they call?
You can go online to JunoOpera.org, and right on the front page, you'll see a picture of the Mother of Mary, and you can click on more information there, and it'll take you to a link to buy tickets. You can also call our office at 586-2742. And we can hook you up with tickets that way. But that's pretty much the two outlets. I think the Jack also, if you go to their website, they have a link to our ticket form there, because we're not using the general, you know, Jack and Hearthside. We're using a slightly different ticketing system, but the Jack has graciously put the link to our ticket form on their website.
So my other question about conducting, Sarah, is 28 seems like a lot. Talk a little bit about the challenges of being a conductor, particularly if you've not been here. How do you manage all that? Scarlett's laughing. Are you the substitute conductor, Scarlett?
Heck no.
Well, a lot of it, honestly, is the time and learning the part. Really, my joy comes into tweaking everything once everybody knows their parts, in terms of, you know, dynamics and tempi, you know, whether how fast or slow it goes or how loud or soft it goes, and little things of, you know, text, emphasis on certain text. You know, I call them like tasty words, things you really want to taste in your mouth as you sing it, just because they're beautiful, or just, you know, the tuning aspects of things, and the vowels that make that really emphasize or just help to create a better, pure, you know, more in tune sound. Because there's nothing more beautiful than hearing a whole group of men or women, but singing in tune, and everyone gets excited when you have those beautiful harmonies come together, and they're real tight. So, but the challenge lies again, really, in just the plunking out of the parts.
Right.
And Missouri Smythe, bless her, she has been doing that for us.
She stood up and said, "Sarah, let me do this."
Yeah, she said, "Let me help you." And I said, "I love you. Thank you so much."
We should mention she is a middle school music teacher here and has been the founder of, and for a long time leader of, Alaska Youth Choir.
Youth Choir, yeah. Which was recently taken over by Richard Moore. But she still, you know, she knows her stuff, and it's been great
to have.
She's
a treasure.
Yeah, it has been great to have her and Sally and all of the women there that have taken the time to do this. You know, our first rehearsal was on Mother's Day.
Yeah.
And in the afternoon, and the first thing I think that came out of my mouth was, look at all of you women that took time on your day to come sing together. That says a lot right there about singing together as a group, and just how special it is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So just before we sign off, I want to go back to something you mentioned right at the front, Scarlett, and that is that this is the 40th year of the Juno Lyric Opera.
Yeah, last year was our 40th season.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a midsummer program as well. Are there any other things that folks should know about that the Juno Lyric Opera is up to in the next few months?
Lots of good stuff.
Do you know our season next year?
I have. You better go for it.
Okay.
I know there's Opera-toba Fest and all kinds of good stuff.
All kinds of fun stuff. We haven't done the official unveiling yet, but we will continue to have our midsummer and midwinter choral festivals, which is open to anybody. And then in October, we will always do our Divas,
the
Hoosier Diva event. It's a big fundraiser for us. We get 10 women that come up there and sing their hearts out,
and the audience
vote with your dollars.
That'll be the fifth or sixth year,
And then in October is Oktoberfest. Or sorry, we're calling it Opera-toberfest.
Yes,
so no Lederhosen or Umba bands, but we're going to sing opera drinking songs, and it's going to be kind of a sing-along in the downtown bar area.
What's not to like?
It should be a hoot. Beer, opera, singing.
Lots of fun
what
stuff coming
wrong?
Up.
What could go wrong?
We're talking with Scarlett Adam and Sarah Brown of the Juno Lyric Opera. And if you are interested in hearing the Afternoon of Ave Marias, which will be this Sunday, the open show now is 5 p.m. at the Shrine, you need to get tickets by calling 586-2742 or go to the website junoopera.org or check the website for the Jack. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for staying with us on a Juno afternoon. Lori Scandling here with you, and with me is Julie Diane from the Juno Dance Theater, going to be talking about the program Spring Showcase, which is May 26th and 27th. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, your husband
took over the Juno Dance Theater. How many years has it been? Two, three, four?
2 years.
Well,
2 years.
You're still here. Congratulations.
Oh,
I know it was
a
big step for you and your husband when you came and took over, and I think are you the executive director and he's the artistic director?
Yes, we like to call ourselves Team Hench, but yes, those are our titles, but we're so thrilled to be here, and we've fallen in love with Juno and the community, and we're just really grateful for this opportunity to be working.
And does the Juno Dance Theater serve adults as well as youth?
Yes, absolutely. So we serve ages 3 through adult. And actually coming up in our spring showcase, we do have some of our adult students in the program as well, which is really exciting. We are featuring students of all levels from all of our different styles of classes that we offer. And from the real littles at the very beginning of the program to some adults who are working with some of our advanced students in a modern piece by Alicia Fahlberg, and then in Once in a Blue Moon, which was choreographed by some students in our choreography workshop class, and we will have an adult in there as well who did some of the narration, and he'll be the toy maker. So it's really an all-inclusive program that we have at JDT, and we feel that this program really reflects, these performances really reflect that.
I noticed that on the lovely poster here promoting the showcase, which again is Friday, May 26th at 7 in the evening, and Saturday, May 27th at 2 and 7 in the evening at the JDHS Auditorium, that you mentioned new choreography by, and there are a number of folks listed, and I recognize some local names. So that's exciting. Is that something that JDT has always done, is offer choreography instruction as well as the actual dance instruction?
No, that's something, that came with Zach and I when we took over 2 years ago, this choreography workshop class. I know that there has been new choreography done in the past, but we're really trying to cultivate the next generation of choreographers and learning how to craft a piece from beginning to end and then looking at all the technical elements, lighting, and the staging and the costuming. The students really get a better idea of what it encompasses. And I think it provides them the tools as they move forward, either in their dance career or whether they choose to go a different direction. They have a great idea of what it takes to create a piece for the stage.
Should somebody be a dancer before they can choreograph? Or is that a skill that can be organic without having ever been a dancer?
Absolutely, it can be organic without ever having been a dancer. I think movement is something that we do all day, every day, as natural human beings. And to look at that movement in a new way, perhaps, looking at it through a different lens, and then setting some steps in a continuum, I think is really the beginning of what choreography is about. So anyone can do it.
Looks like you're going to have excerpts from some well-known pieces. You want to talk about some of those a little bit? I think folks might recognize some of the dances that there will be segments from.
Yes, absolutely. So we're featuring Act Two of Swan Lake, excerpts from it, but really a great big chunk. The very famous pas de deux, the big swans and little swans, Odette's solo and the coda. So it's a really beautiful, very famous, very iconic score that people are familiar with, and also our dancers are just doing a really lovely job. Technically, they've developed so much, and artistically, and they're able to handle these really meaty productions. Also, Tchaikovsky Pas de Deux is a George Balanchine ballet. We are very fortunate to have been given the rights, the permission to do an excerpt from this piece. Not all schools are given this permission, and not all professional companies either. So we're very grateful for that, and it's such a beautiful gem of a variation. It's fast, it's exciting, it's a real challenge for the dancers, and again, they're really stepping up to these opportunities, and we're very proud of that.
Julie, why do you think that JDT got the permission to use that? Is it because have a little bit of panache associated with Alaska, or is it the usefulness of the theater, or what do you think was the tipping point?
Right, so a lot of it had to do with the fact that Zach and I in our professional dance careers have performed a lot of George Balanchine's choreography. So I'm the official repetitor for this, so I reached out to the George Balanchine Trust. Last year we were also given the rights to do Fascinating Rhythm from Who Cares. So they entrusted us that we will be presenting Balanchine's choreography with the integrity and the correct style that it demands. And also they're recognizing that our school is of that caliber, that is capable of doing it. So it's a real step up for Juno Dance Theater in that
regard. And reflects your professionalism and your network in the professional world of dancing as well.
Right.
So what are the ticket prices, and where can they be had?
Yeah, so general admission is $20, youth, student, senior discount of $15 for the tickets, and we also do discounts for groups of four or more, and they can get tickets, everyone can get tickets at junodance.org, which is our website, and more information about the performances can be found there in our various programs, at the Jack, Hearthside Books, and at the door.
We're talking with Julie Diane, who, with her husband, run the Juno Dance Theater, which will be hosting a spring showcase a week from Friday. That's May 26th at 7 in the evening. Saturday, May 27th at 2 in the afternoon and 7 in the evening. One last question. What do you say to people who say, nah, I'm not interested in dance?
Oh, give
What's
it a try.
What's your elevator speech?
Oh, give it a try. There's so much for everyone. It's such a diverse program with all kinds of different styles, energies, ages. I mean, there's something for everyone. So if you haven't experienced it before, I encourage you to come. That's how we're putting our programs together, is to really engage audiences and really educate about all the different styles. And of course, it's showcasing our students', you know, abilities and skills that they've been working on all year, but it's also really meant to engage the community and entertain. So I encourage everyone to give it a try. Come see us.
Well, thanks to you and Zach for your work, and thanks for joining me today, Julie.
Thank you so much for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 16th of May, 2017. It's the birthday of Lewis Terkel, Studs Terkel, the radio man and writer, born in New York City, 1912. Family moved to Chicago when he was 8 years old. Went to college and law school, graduated, but failed to pass the bar. He got work writing radio scripts with the Federal Writers Project and also performing in radio soap operas that originated in Chicago. In the very early days of television, he had his own show, Studs' Place, which was dropped by NBC at the height of the McCarthy era. The NBC executives were uncomfortable with various political petitions that Terkel had signed. So he got out of television and into radio. He started a show on WFMT in 1952. It went on for 45 years. He was in his mid-50s, Studs Terkel, when he had an actor named Eleanor Braun on his show, and she mentioned him to her friend Andre Schifrin, who was a publisher. And Schifrin approached Terkel, asked if he'd consider producing a book of interviews with ordinary people, and the book was called Division Street America. It was a big success in 1967. Followed by many more, Hard Times, an oral history of the Great Depression, and Will the Circle Be Unbroken? Reflections on Death, Rebirth, and Hunger for a Faith. Studs Terkel, who said about interviewing, "It isn't an inquisition, it's an exploration, usually an exploration into the past. So I think the gentlest question is the best one, and the gentlest is, and what happened then?" It's the birthday of one of the first well-known female mathematicians, born in Milan in 1718, Maria Gaetana Agnesi. Her father, Pietro, a businessman, her mother, an aristocrat. The child was a brilliant little girl. By the age of 10, she spoke 5 languages. At the age of 9, she addressed a group of academics in Latin on the subject of women's rights and access to education. She wanted to enter a convent, but when her mother died, she had to take charge of the household and care for her many siblings. But she maintained her interest in math and philosophy. And in 1733, she published a collection of essays based on the talks that she had given to her father's circle of friends. And that same year, she began working on a math textbook, which grew into a larger work, and in which she wrote an equation for a specific bell-shaped curve that is still used today. The book Analytical Institutions, published 1748, highly regarded in academic circles for synthesizing complex mathematical ideas. Here's a poem for today, some lines from The Prelude by William Wordsworth. When from our better selves we have too long been parted by the hurrying world, and droop sick of its business, of its pleasures, tired, how gracious, how benign is solitude. Hermit, deep in the bosom of the wilderness, votary and vast cathedral where no foot is treading and no other face is seen, kneeling at prayer, or watchman on the top of lighthouse, beaten by Atlantic waves. Lines from the Prelude by William Wordsworth. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Staples, with print and marketing solutions designed to promote businesses, including business cards, presentations, large banners, and posters, printed in-store or ordered online. Learn more at Staples and Staples.com. Staples. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
And welcome back. We have a studio full of guests right now. Very exciting. I have with me Christy Germain. She is assistant principal at Santa Kahini Middle School. And three eighth graders are with us from the classroom, language arts classroom of Tracy Goldsmith, and they are Jonah Brown, Camille Varner, and Karina Bathija. And we are going to be talking about a project that this language arts class took on, and if I understand it correctly, each of you was in a different project with the same theme, which was taking on a real-life issue in our community and developing, was it an advertising campaign to address it?
Yes.
Camille, do you, or who wants to start?
It was advertising for it, and we also were presenting ideas to solve it partially in a way.
So a real-life problem and how to approach it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Karina, why don't you go ahead and describe the project that you worked on and what the resolution was?
So my group and I worked on raising awareness about cancer treatment expenses in Alaska, and our idea was to raise awareness and funds and donate to Cancer Connection, which is a local organization that supports families affected by cancer. We originally wanted to host a 5K or a mile run, but that wasn't possible, so instead we hosted a weekender, which is where you basically play games and
at the school
on a
Friday afternoon.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
That's what a weekender is.
We had a pretty good turnout, and it was pretty cool because now we have some experience on what it's like to host an event.
How much money did you raise? Do you have that figured out yet, Karina?
We raised approximately $250.
And that will go to Cancer Connection.
Yes.
Karina, what was the bottom line you learned about the cost of cancer services in Alaska?
We learned, obviously, that cost is very high, and we wanted to support families because it's important to get treatment when you need it, right? And so we wanted to support families that needed the help to pay for their cancer treatment.
Okay. Camille, describe the project that your group worked on.
So my group chose to recognize and kind of piggyback on the Year of Kindness that the Juneau Police Department is putting on. And so we set up we called it a Kindness Initiative Mingle, and that was at lunch. And we had a lot of helpers to bake us cookies, and we baked over 400 cookies to give to each student. And we basically sat everybody down, mixed the classes up, and had them talk about what kindness means to them. And to get that all over the school is pretty cool, and have it successful is, crazy. The Year of Kindness is an amazing cause, and I think that, especially in this day and age, we all need a little kindness in our lives.
Camille, when you talk about a mingle, people probably know that at the lunchtime, at any school setting, kids always sit with the same kids. So was the mingle intended to get people to chat with those that they didn't know and to socialize a little bit?
So we actually made a chart of which classes sit with each other. And so the classes that didn't really know each other sat with each other. And it turned out pretty well. I would say.
Did you get some feedback from students about that experience?
We did. We asked them what kindness means to them, and it means, like, being nice to people. And then we asked, what was the last time you did something kind for someone else or someone else did something kind for you? And we were just looking for feedback on how kindness is being spread throughout the community.
Did you see kids talking to each other after who might not have talked to each other before?
Well, people came up to me that I've never seen, and they were like, thank you for putting this on. And that was so heartwarming because that's never happened. No one, and, yeah, it was just really successful.
And those good feelings last a long time, don't
yeah.
they? And Jonah, talk about the project that your group worked on.
So we hosted a bike to school day for our school just to get people out, and it was to support, like, getting rid of global warming and everything, since that's, like, a huge problem in our society right now. And so we had we encouraged people to bike to school, like, a couple Fridays ago, we had a pretty big turnout, and it was, like, a whole idea to reduce carbon emissions from, like, cars and people going to school and their parents' cars and stuff like that. And it ended up working pretty well. We had a group that actually biked all the way out from Tea Harbor and everything. And, yeah, there's a bunch of groups from downtown, and it ended up pretty well.
What kind of research did you have to do to learn more about whether or not carbon emissions is an issue, say, in our community?
We didn't do too much of research about this. We just, like, we knew that carbon emissions and cars and stuff were a huge problem, and we actually researched that a little bit into it, but we didn't have an extreme amount of time to get too far into it. So, yeah.
When did the project start, Jonah?
The project started about a month ago, or a little more than a month ago.
And so the students had the opportunity to work in groups. And did you pick your own local issue, or were they assigned to you?
We got to pick our own global issue or local issue. And, yeah.
We're talking with Jonah Brown, Camille Varner, and Karina Bathija, three students in the 8th grade language arts class at Santa Kahini Middle School of teacher Tracy Goldsmith. Also with us is assistant principal Christy Germain. Christy, talk a little bit about the meaningfulness or benefits of students working on such projects. You might hear someone say, yes, but it should be reading, writing, arithmetic. Why aren't they hitting the books? So talk a little bit about why this type of project is something that is appropriate in a middle school.
I think it has been a wonderful project, especially for the students to make those connections that need to happen. Jonah didn't mention, but he made a number of community calls, including connecting with JPD so that they knew the bike to school was happening, connecting with me, asking legal questions, and just anticipating the pros and cons of what they were planning, the ramifications for any decisions, timing comes into place. And actually, with all three of these groups shared, it's an authentic assessment of everything coming together. So it's a real project where you have to use your speaking skills, your listening skills, your organization and coordination. Dates became really important, of finding a time that would work well.
Logistics
in general. And that's a real life skill that we want all of our students to leave school with. For example, the date for Camille's kindness activity included all of the classroom teachers upstairs, because often students hang out in the classroom at lunch. So they needed to all come downstairs to be involved. Our dance required a lot of planning.
I want to thank all of you for being here and talking about the projects that you worked on. And thank you for joining us on a Juno afternoon. I'm Laurie Scandling, and we'll close with some music from Gary Motley, who is performing with Juno Jazz and Classics.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast